And the weather today, highs of 18 degrees centigrade, lows of 10 degrees centigrade. It'll be a cloudy but mainly dry morning with some patchy rain possible.
The Midweek Drive and Midweek Drive Morning Editions with Alex Levchuk and the Midweek Drivettes on Siren 107.3 FM. A 21st century radio programme with 23rd century philosophies.
Always important to look forward to the future, as the Galactic Echo would say, particularly when you're actually looking 300 years into the future at the Lake District. Isn't that right, ace creator of Galactic Echo, Simon Coates?
Yes, absolutely. I couldn't put it better myself.
Well, always critical, because you have obviously come on our radar through the delights of Jenna Warren and the Book Corner at Saltburn and many other fine folk, because since studying at Teesside University and doing all manner of routines, you've become quite a science fiction writer, have you not?
Yeah, it's funny how I suppose these things don't just... The path towards doing this is obviously quite an unusual one. And I'm probably not a traditional writer in the, if you like, traditional sense. But yes, I mentioned about Jenna Warren. Yeah, of course, I know Jenna through the book corner in Saltburn. It's one of the bookshops that I've gotten books for sale.
It's small but perfectly formed. That's what we always like to say.
Apparently it's the smallest mainland bookshop in Europe, which I can quite believe, yeah.
Exactly. That's why we've hosted radio shows there. You wouldn't believe it could be done, but it has. Amazing.
Really? You've actually had...
We have indeed actually recorded at least two editions of Book of the Month there, possibly three. It's amazing.
Oh, right, excellent.
Let us progress, because this particular aspect, which, again, we talk about Galactic Echo, working title from that for you, over 100,000 words, double the word count of other stories published, and set in the Lake District approximately 300 years from now. And obviously, last night we featured Celeste Yarnell with us on the programme. Celeste, if you're interested in Star Trek at all, you may recall from the original series, Celeste was Yeoman Martha Landon in an episode called The Apple. She's done lots of other things as well, but it's obviously... we're in the 50th anniversary of Star Trek, etc. Also in the Kirk era, of course, set in the 23rd century. We never see what's happened to the Lake District. So is it a utopia? Is it a dystopia?
Yeah. The story I'm currently writing, I don't have a title yet. Mm-hmm. But basically, it's not a utopia. No, essentially all my stories are based on a possible future that might happen. And, utopias and dystopias and all this sort of thing, they're all interesting ideas, but mine's more the idea of what is probably quite likely to happen. So there's nothing outrageous like aliens or anything like that. And so the current story you mentioned about the Lake District, basically what I've done is the central theme is what's happening in the 23rd, 24th century, and the stories that I've written are based in this time, so they're all sort of interlinked in a very general way. So the reason why it's set in the Lake District is, it has to be set somewhere, and the main character comes from the Lake District, a lot of the action actually takes place on planet Mars, but he lives in the Lake District, so it's quite...
It's good to hear, Simon, that you haven't fallen out of love with the Red Planet, because a couple of years ago now, when we first featured Good Self, we talked about bike racing into the Red, the Diary of Silas Volante, and this was the extraordinary thing which tied in very much with the Tour de France, the Tour de Mars, which could be coming through in all sorts of ways, cycling on Mars and so on, which is quite interesting, particularly as we said, we're very much into science, the inspirational science that comes from that perspective. Is this something which, as we've just seen in the cinema last couple of years, of course, The Martian was well in place there. We still have this fascination. 100 or so years ago, of course, a little over that now, 120 years ago nearly, H.G. Wells was writing about the Martian invasion. We still...
Yes, of course, War of the Worlds,
Edgar Rice Burroughs, of course, has written about the John Carter of Mars and so on. So, it's our closest planet, but nobody has taken your line, Simon, of course, of cycling on Mars.
Yeah, well, of course, the idea I've come through is sort of thinking, well, in the future, if we sort of have the technology to live there, which is something that could happen, it's more my sort of stories are based on what we'd do if that was the case. So, for example, the cycling story, I'm a cyclist myself. Mars has this huge mountain called Olympus Mons on it. And I thought, well, yeah, rather than having stories about alien invasions and World War III and all that sort of thing, which is good fun, you know, I thought it'd be interesting to write a story about a bike race up Olympus Mons, because we'd probably do something like that if we lived there. I mean, we do hill climbs. I do them myself, you know, where you go up a hill. Obviously nothing like Olympus Mons.
Sometimes, Simon, you can just step out into Rosebery Topping, you're thinking on another world.
Yeah.
Whole range of routine.
Topping, of course, yeah. But yeah, so basically, as I said, going back to the current story I'm writing, which is, I suppose I've finished the first draft, the idea behind that is a bit more, it's a bit more of a traditional sci-fi, because I thought, well, if we lived on Mars, there would probably be areas where we don't really live. You know, it's like, think of the Wild West in America. And so I've created an area called, I called it the Blacklands, where it's a bit of an unusual area where there's all sorts of, shall we say, vagrants and criminals live there. And it's a bit of a mafia type thing. So that's what this story's about. And it's about the government thinking, we've got to sort this out. So there's a bit of fighting involved. And as I said, the Lake District comes in because the main character, that's where he lives. So it's quite an interesting story. And yeah, as I say, I mean, Mars, as you said, it's quite a fascinating area, because when you look at, this is real, by the way, when you look at the NASA photographs of Mars, it looks like Earth. It actually looks like planet Earth. So it's very...
Well,
it's
sort
very
of a reddish version of the Earth. And there are conspiracy theorists, Simon, who say, well, that's exactly what it is. It's just made up. It's like the moon landings. They never took place.
Maybe it doesn't exist. Possibly, yeah. It makes my story a bit difficult. But, you know, yes, possible. Yeah, I haven't thought of that. Maybe Mars doesn't actually exist. It's just
a figment of our imaginations.
Yeah, it could be, yeah.
We're in the Philip K. Dick world of living in Roman times, but are actually so inured to the drugs that we're sort of being fed that we just think it's a different world entirely. Let's not talk about Philip K. Dick, because that could be a whole new world. Let's talk about the Galactic Echo. As we said, it's fiction based on life in the late 23rd, early 24th century. You've got, for instance, the 2299 Formula 10 guidebook and the Diary of Silas Volante. The guidebook, of course, a preview for the 2229 racing season. Very good.
Yeah, so again, it's actually not Formula 10, it's actually Formula X.
I was obviously Philip K. Dick. I thought Roman numerals. No, it's Formula X, like 0X in Thunderbirds.
It's funny actually when you say that, because I've never thought of that. I've never ever seen that. But I suppose when you look at the book, you think, well, yeah, Formula 10, of course.
Well,
it's amazing, isn't it? Amazing, isn't it? So yeah, again, those again, the central theme is what life might be like, and so the idea of Formula Racing is a type of Formula One car racing, but with spaceships instead of cars. And that was a lot of fun to do, actually. Because imagine, if we lived on Mars, then spaceships would have to be a realistic mode of transport. So if that was the case, we'd end up racing them. It's something we probably almost inevitably do, you know? So again, that was, those two books were a lot of fun to do as well,
Folk who have an awareness of Martian writing and so on, who might be listening to this, will say, but what about the number one Martian author, Ray Bradbury, and the Martian Chronicles? Were you influenced by Ray Bradbury's work at all with that?
Well, I'm ashamed to admit it, but I don't read much at all, unfortunately, which is quite unusual for a writer, because with me, I feel I don't really need to get inspiration from anyone else.
Just living on Teesside is enough, really. I mean, it's a bit like living in Lincoln. Whole new world emerges, really.
So, yeah, it's interesting that. But I am sort of looking to read more. Of course, I've written quite a few, like H.G. Wells.
Simon, reading and writing simultaneously, it's too much for most of our undergraduates, let alone postgraduates. It's amazing. You can obviously go to galacticecho.com or indeed check out Galactic Echo on Facebook and the usual sites on Twitter and so on. You can get a free download from the encyclopedia of the Galactic Echo, which is wonderful from that point of view. Are we kind of riffing on the Northern Echo here, or were you tempted to actually sometimes say the Galactic Gazette?
Well, what it was, the idea where I got the name from, the idea was, when I got the idea of doing writing, it was a bit of a hobby, which always would be, wouldn't it? So I started out with this idea of writing about the future, and I thought this would be a bit of fun to do. So I started doing this, and the idea was to do it as a newspaper, you see. So set in the 24th century, and reporting on events as if they were really happening.
Like so TV like 21 used to do for the 21st century and Gerry Anderson.
All right, yeah. Yeah, so it was just, it was that, it was just a bit of fun. And then I left it alone for a few years. And then a couple of years ago, I thought, let's try and revisit this and see if I can do something with it, you know? And so to go back to the original point about the name, essentially it was a newspaper, and I thought, well, I've got to call it something. And so, yeah, the Northern Echo, the Liverpool Echo, I thought, well, how about the Galactic version, the Galactic? So it is inspired from that, because we have Echo newspapers. And, so as I say, I went from the idea of a newspaper to actual stories set in this future. And I just liked the idea that the name sounds a bit quirky, and I thought, well, just keep it, you know. So that's how it came about, really. So, yes, the website is galactic-echo.com. And like you say, yeah, you can get a free download, because I've got the books, like the bike racing story and the racing spaceship story. They're available to purchase as usual, and you can actually get, I think on Amazon you get like a, I think it's something like 20% of this, like the start of the story for free. But the encyclopedia is fully the full lot, which is the whole sort of concept written as that's actually available fully to download from. Unfortunately, Amazon don't really allow that. They're a bit funny. But on a site called Smashwords, it's available to download. And you can go through my site to find it. So
it's more wonderful. And if you go through there and you check out personal appearances, you can also see a phrase which on the same day as Lincoln celebrates Lincolnshire Day, we have on October the 1st, Teesside Unleashed, own Comic Con.
Yes, I do a lot of these. It's actually the last event. That's why there's only one event listed. I think I might have a few other ones, but that's like the last major event that I'm doing this year. And they're really good, actually, because...
Sylvester Mackay has the chance to meet you. I mean, Sylvester Mackay and Simon Coates. It's just...
Yes, I think he's going to be there, isn't he?
He is, yes.
Yeah. So, yeah, I do a lot of these events where they're really good. Basically, the science fiction conventions and I have a table, and there's a lot of other authors and loads of other people to do with sci-fi. So it's a really, really good event. And I mean, they're very, very well organised. So that's, if you're a science fiction fan, they're an absolute...
It's the way forward, clearly. And it's at the Martin Hotel and Country Club, which is actually just up the road from our northern studio or in Southside Broadcasting. It's amazing. It's just wonderful. You should
in fact,
there.
Myself, because I live about 2 miles away, so I can practically walk it.
Let's just actually sort of work our way through the list of fine folk who are actually there. In addition to yourself, Simon, we've also got another Simon, your namesake, and indeed a former sort of regular contributor, but we've lost touch with over the years, the creator, co-creator of Viz Magazine, Simon Donald, will be there. We mentioned Sylvester Mackay. You've got Sylvester Mackay, Colin Baker, and Peter Davidson. So that's the 5th, 6th, and 7th Doctors that are actually there. Stephen Petty will be around as well, and a whole heap of other goodies. So that's Teesside Unleashed. Just a little heads up from that point of view, which of course you can find out details about either on their own Facebook page. We should really be taking commission from this point of view, but what the heck. But also going back to Galactic Echo, of course, and galactic-echo.com. Final plug actually
say as well, with you mentioned about the doctors being there, on my table as well, I'm going to try and really sell I'm doing here, but when I wrote the spaceship books, I got them professionally illustrated by an artist.
I was going to say Mike Wood.
Mike Wood, yes, and I mean he's an absolutely phenomenal artist. He does it as a hobby, but he should really be, you know, like he should be doing making it as a living. But exceptionally talented artist, and he draws. What he mainly does is that he illustrates in the books because they were the sort of books that need illustrating. Yeah, like the bike story doesn't need illustrate, it's just a normal story, but the other ones do. And I can't draw, so I got Mike Wood to illustrate the images in the book. But what Mike does, he draws famous people and portraits of characters, and he's actually done, with the mention about the doctors that are going to be at Teesside Unleashed, he's actually done Sylvester Mackay and some of the other doctors.
He's done David Tennant. He's even done Captain James T. Kirk. He's got Alec Guinness as Obi-Wan Kenobi. Yeah. He's got E.T. He's got everything. Yeah. As we said, coming to an agreement with Mike, whose remit was initially to illustrate your books about spaceship racing, has now actually sort of worked on all sorts of things, basically. So
what I was going to say as well, I've actually got examples of his work with me. And I've been to, what I do as well, a lot of these events I go to, and I'll be doing the same at Teesside Unleashed. If you'd like a portrait of one of these famous people, you can have one for free if you buy a book.
What, it's I mean, this just gets better and better. I mean, Simon, it's been absolutely...
Yeah, I mean, it's, I've done amazing portraits, really. You know, it's fantastic, you know. So, yeah.
Simon Coates.
It's really good, yeah.
Science fiction author extraordinaire, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme this morning? Has it been good for you?
Yes, it's... I do. There's another radio station, Chapman's Bay Radio, based up in Washington, which I regularly speak on. So, it's, I like to,
well,
to speak. And
that's the important thing. We're actually celebrate the horror. It's been an author based over Arthur McKenzie before the news. You're a good self, Simon. Afterwards, William Sitwell, of course, whose book Eggs or Anarchy is around and still available, will be talking to us. We've got Graham Harper, a television director who's actually directed Doctor Who extensively, so, and directed Colin Baker. So all great stuff on that point of view. Bottom line, will you return, Simon Coates, to the programme in the not-too-distant future?
I think so, of course. The big thing for me would be getting this next book launched. Mm. So obviously I'll be hoping to do that. I don't know when it'll be done because it's...
You can't rush genius, particularly if it's in the 23rd or 24th century. You've got a few hundred years anyway. Galactic...
I mean, it's certainly done before then. Hopefully.
Yeah, exactly. Galactic-echo.com. Or indeed, just check out Simon Coates. Big question, of course. We know how many bicycles there are in Beijing, according to Katie Mellier at least. How many are there on Mars?
On Mars? Well, at the moment... I would say about none at the moment.
Yeah,
but when they do the Olympic bike race, I'm sure there'll be quite a few.
But at least 9 million. Fantastic.
Yes.
There are 9 million bicycles in Beijing. That's a fact. 9 million bicycles in Beijing. And you know that I will love you till I die.
Is the lunch break officially dead? The lunch hour that, of course, used to be part and parcel of British working life, it could well be declared officially dead. And that's not a good thing, according to recent research from MasterCard and more from that perspective. Now, to address this whole issue and really sort of explain why the lunch break is an essential part of good, healthy, productive work, we're delighted to be able to welcome that legendary soul from, of course, The Apprentice, legal advisor, a top legal soul, general all-round Renaissance woman, Margaret Mountford. How are you, Margaret?
Very well, thank you. A bit stunned by that introduction.
Always important to ensure that we start as we mean to go on, I believe. In terms of the overall survey that's come through this particular aspect, though, more than half of British workers take 30 minutes or less for lunch. Now, it's not just that. I mean, in the academic world, we're often having to just make do with 10, 15 minutes. We often sort of get caught up in the whole spirit of work, but that's not really good for productivity or anything else, is it?
No, it's not good for you and it's not good for work. It's much better if people can take a proper break from work, ideally get out, get a bit of fresh air, have something proper to eat, socialise, talk to others, or go and sit on their own, you know, under a tree and clear their heads. Mm. This culture of feeling that you need to be at your desk and be seen to be at your desk, clutching a sandwich in one hand and, you know, marking your script with the other or whatever it is, it's not good.
Mm. 70% of office workers don't even leave their workplace at lunchtime. Again, as you've rightly just said, sometimes that change of scenery in a world where oftentimes we are indeed almost chained to the computer or even with our mobile device, you might sort of think, oh, we'll take that about. Sometimes you need to switch off. It's kind of like an organic reboot, isn't it?
It is. I mean, there was a recent survey that said that sitting down all day is even worse for you than smoking is. I mean, that's shocking. And, you know, we all know, you know, we're a nation now suffering from back pain because we sit hunched over desks all day. It makes you less sluggish. If you get up and move around, you go outside, you get more alert, your attention span increases. So even if it looks as if you're taking an hour away from your desk, you're probably more productive, sufficiently more productive when you go back to it, that you've made up the time.
In terms of that whole process, is it the responsibility of managers across the workplaces and across the industries, etc., to actually make sure that they can enforce this aspect? Because there is that tendency, human beings being what they are, to say, oh, I'll just catch up on this, or I'll just skip that, or I'll just move into this. And it can easily be eroded.
It can be. And I think managers and bosses need to set an example and set a culture that it's not cool to be at your desk all day, it's much smarter to take a proper break.
Culturally, we look at colleagues, obviously, in Japan. We look at America. We look at other European examples and so on. And you get a wide variety of activities going on from that perspective. In a world where one had hoped that the macho notion of it's the duration we can stick it for and actually keep on going and working hard and up but not smarter, is that something which is particularly British now? Is it something we kind of have become infected with? How has this manifested itself in terms of our 21st century life?
I think it's come from America, like all these things do, and I think that was where you first started having this thing about leaving your jacket on the back of your chair, so it looked as if you were there all the time, and so it's moved across. It hasn't affected mainland Europe as much, and the statistics show that we're actually less productive here than they are in France and Italy, where there is still a culture of taking a proper lunch hour.
Well, that's certainly something which, again, I mean, without going into siestas and other sort of aspect, there was, for many ways, almost a cliched view about the European way of operating and all sorts of other factors.
And I don't think anyone's suggesting a sort of four-hour lunch break, you know, accompanied by a siesta, but a good hour does everybody a lot of good.
Now, we mentioned this was research carried out by MasterCard. Clearly, from that perspective, there's a rationale in terms of there's a new app that's been launched by MasterCard to ensure that you can even shorten some times with respect to lunch if you're panicking about, oh, yes, it's not so much the lunch break, it's paying for lunch and all sorts of other bits and pieces.
Absolutely. I mean, we all know that you can have assiduous attention from a waiter all through your lunch, and then when you're trying to attract their attention for the bill, which you think they'd be terribly interested to give you, it's terribly hard, and you waste a lot of time waiting for the bill and then waiting for them to come back with the machine so that you can pay it with your card. And MasterCard have developed this app called Quikr, QKR, which can be used with all credit cards and debit cards. It's not just MasterCard. Which enables you to have it all done through your mobile phone. So what you've ordered will appear on your mobile phone. You can pay through your mobile phone, so you cut out that, on average, 12 minutes of hanging around time.
Which presumably could also allow the waiters and waitresses time to actually add to their lunch break, conceivably. So it could be a virtuous circle here.
Absolutely, and that's what we want.
Finally, in terms of the way in which we can actually monitor this, do you suggest that the prognosis is overall good, possibly good for us, Margaret? I mean, is it a case of, you know, will this be sort of seen as, oh, well, it was a brave attempt, but ultimately we look back at the early parts of the 21st century and think, no, we just got to work non-stop and just plug in from dawn to dusk?
No, I think we're changing. I think that as people realise they're going to have to work longer, and they're more concerned about lifestyle while they're working, and this is all part of that, having a healthy lifestyle. Because if you're going to have to work until you're 70 or 75, you're going to need to be healthy.
In terms of actually finding the web address to actually go to, presumably QKR.
QKR and MasterCard Newsroom.
There we are, you see. Sorted through, and that will actually take you through all sorts of other areas. Margaret, it's been an absolute delight touching base with your good self. Some fascinating and insightful input as we duly expected and anticipated. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today?
I have indeed. It's been great to talk to you, Alex. Thank you very much.
In which case, hopefully, we can prevail upon you to join us again in the not-too-distant future, if only to keep the Girton College alumni flying the flag, really.
I'd love to.
You're listening to Siren FM is magical, surely, isn't it? Up later today, Squabble Box Thursday emerges between 11 and 1. We've also got Drive Time on Siren FM with Peter Haywood between 5 and 7, and then between 7 and 8. It's a wonderful classic example of the Stone Tapes with Sam Stone and David J. Howe and George Mann and Patricia Ash and heaps of goodiness with respect to fantasy and science fiction material between 7 and 8 this evening, just ahead of the Rock Train Extra Carriage. Sometimes we feel as though actually we're just too good to you.
beautiful people. You live in the same world as I do, but somehow I never noticed you before today. I'm ashamed to say, beautiful people, we share the same back door and it isn't right. We never met before, 'cause there'll always be someone with the same button on as you. Include him in everything you do. He may be sitting right next to you. He may be a beautiful people too. And if you take care of him, well, then maybe he'll take care of you. 'Cause all of the beautiful,
it's all down to perception. Everybody's beautiful, really. Isn't that right, Ace television director Graham Harper?
Yes, I think they are.
There we are, exactly. Melanie, not singing about a brand new key, or indeed Ruby Tuesday there, but beautiful people. Hurrah! As we actually reach 25 minutes to 10 o'clock in Lincoln, England, could the time be the same in Acton, London?
Spot on. Amazing. Exactly the same.
In the first part of the programme, we confirmed that we had exactly synchronised timely routines between Lincoln, England, and Arthur Mackenzie in Newcastle, also in England. And now you've proven it from the other side. It's astounding, really. This time malarkey is genuinely amazing. It's only a matter of days, of course, when we were at the fabulous 2016 North of England Horticultural Society's Autumn Flower Show.
Yeah, it was very, very good. It was really eye-opening.
Now, when I left you there, obviously after doing our reporting, which you can clearly listen again to by going to the podcast and downloading things and all sorts of other areas, I wasn't sure what the scenario would be. How did you manage to control Bernadette, or have you come back with lots of water features, lots of rock? Was it a case of once set free, it was a case of I'll have that one, and that one?
No, she limited herself. We have heard
podcast.
Podcast. Thank you very much for the word. I didn't stop laughing, I'm afraid. So all the listeners, it is worth listening to, but it does make you laugh because you've got the most grumpiest old git.
Making comment, which is me, and
my wife, who is eloquent. It was really extraordinary.
It was that balance which we knew from working in the television industry that the role of the casting director is vital. And you know, as I've said for years, you know, the Harper's on tour. It's you know, it's a series which I think is award winning. To be honest, you know?
I don't know
work
about
our way
that.
Through that.
Make you laugh, I should think.
Well, there you go. And of course, you know, life. So, what was your favourite bit of the festival? Because I mean, you were there for the whole Saturday, pretty much. So, what was your
two things amazed me there? Well, no, I thought the whole thing was extraordinary. It's so diverse. But the dahlias I found fascinating. And the passion for growing dahlias, yeah. The group that we met there, were fantastic. Just very interesting and passionate. And they are truly wonderful flowers. Yeah. And the other was David Cook. I know he's got nothing to do with flowers, but he has got something to do with them.
He's a sculptor, you know.
It's exactly. And he does beautiful sculpting of them. Of plants and trees, as well as many animals. And that part of it really interested me. I found him very interesting. So we've been in contact with each other already, because I'm going to ask him if he might do something for me.
Yay, you see, it's beautiful people. Fantastic stuff there. Simon Coates, who joined us earlier, of course, our author, writing about life in the 23rd and 24th century. We'll get there soon enough, Simon, don't worry. Although it has to be said the notion of a cycle race, bicycling, that is, on Mars is quite intriguing. much. That's what I thought about.
It will happen one day.
I know. And possibly, you know, we will be there or our sort of reincarnated forms to actually sort of see that whole process going through. But the other point we've been echoing through the programme, and it's been interesting getting people's views on this, from Gabriella Peralta in Gibraltar through Arthur McKenzie up in Tyneside, Margaret Mountford, best known as being Margaret from The Apprentice, amongst others, if you recall, yes. Precursor to Karen yep. Brady. Margaret is setting up a campaign, which we were happy to support, to get the British working folk to take a full hour for lunch. Have that restoration of the lunch hour. Not the lunch 10 minutes, not the lunch 15 minutes, not the lunch break and so on, but actually the full hour. Working within the television industry, where clearly time pressures and all the rest of the bits of the pieces are actually there, and I suppose we've moved on from the unionised days where we think it's 5 o'clock in the evening, everything shuts down. What are your views on this, Graham? Do you think, okay, it's not going to happen, or is it something which we maybe need to learn from our European cousins and actually take, you know, take a full hour break in the middle of the day?
Do you know, as a director making programmes, when we're filming, I hated lunch. I really hated the idea that, no, I didn't enforce that we didn't have lunch. I just hated, you're so excited about making what you're making. And then suddenly at 1 o'clock, come what may, wherever you were in the scene or section of the scene you were doing, you had to stop and have lunch. So your momentum goes. And then to drag everybody's interest back after lunch is quite a slow, not that slow, but a slower process than when you start in the morning. However, you all, including me, and as I get older, even more so, you need 1 hour break at lunchtime. Most of that is getting to wherever lunch is going to happen anyway, and then eat it and then come back. So when you have a break during filming, you may have to walk a 10-minute walk all the way down a hill or somewhere or around a corner to get to the food. And if you're short of time, the first assistant director ain't going to give you those 10 minutes extra on top of your lunch. So you need that hour, definitely.
Yeah. Well, there we are. I think it's pretty much unanimous now. And as Margaret pointed out, there is actually an app available that can enable you. If you're concerned that sometimes it takes too long to wait for the waiter or whomever to actually provide you with your service charge and so on and so forth, apparently you can now actually have an app on your phone which enables you to actually sort out your lunch payments almost before you've eaten your lunch. It's amazing, you know.
What you mean, you might not pay and just walk out?
Exactly. Sometimes I think the 21st century has just become far too concerned with time and the importance of that. Anyway, Graham, are you happy to join Arthur in becoming an audio critic now, in terms of a slice of music which will provide for your good self, and you can actually say, well, that was rubbish, or you could say, actually, it's got something in all sorts of ways.
Okay.
It's by a young lady called Lindsay Gold, who we had a special sort of feature on yesterday, focusing on her latest album, Heroines of Future Past. Heroines of Future Past. Whole album has been developed by her own people who've inspired her from that perspective, and whether it's been narratives, storytellers, etc. We're going to have a listen to Storyteller. It has been described by Arthur Weingarten, one of our San Diego correspondents, who indeed was the producer of Murder, She Wrote with Angela Lansbury, amongst other things, as a kind of epic Bond theme. This so it'll be interesting. Lindsay Gold and Storyteller, are you ready for this, Graham Harper?
Yes.
I weave a tapestry of tales, quick-witted Sinbad and other details. How words of princes and imprisoned lambs.
Okay, we will then. Storyteller and Lindsay Gold, Graham, your thoughts?
Yes, a wow factor. I really did like that. She reminds me of Elaine Page, a very young Elaine Page, fantastic voice. And I thought, imagine being a new singer, well, any singer, and you hearing the entrance of that orchestra, the way the music starts, waiting for your moment to start singing, must be really, really nerve-wracking and very exciting. Oh, it was good. Really, really good. I'd like to hear more.
Well, there we are, Graham. You see, thumbs up from that point of view. The Lindsay Gold household will be delighted to actually find that thumbs up for it. Fantastic stuff. Because there's always a gamble, you know, because there are times where, you know, as people would say, you put that forward and they say it's rubbish. But no, I think
it was so... No, exactly. You couldn't say that was rubbish at all.
Exactly. But, you know, so it goes. And no auto-tune whatsoever, which is always good to hear. So that's excellent from that point of view. So as we look ahead, I think the 18th of October, I believe, is being hailed as a possible day where we'll be heading down to Pinewood to do this video shoot, which I'll let you know about more in more time, Graham. But life continues. I mean, can you believe we're almost out? We've got one more week in September, and then we're into October 2016.
Round the corner is Christmas.
Less than 100 shopping days to go. As I look now, there's currently a gazebo being erected just outside the media humanities and technology base that is in Siren, with student services emblazoned in white letters on pink, which is always wonderful for that way, because this week is Welcome Week, where we actually say to incoming students, returning students, and Indigenous generally people, welcome, welcome back to the university as the academic year starts off in all sorts of ways. So it's wonderful stuff. What are you doing yourself, Graham? I mean, are you chilling at present? Or are you still sort of inside number nine? Do we still wait for that to actually come around and sort of launch into the system? Oh, and before we actually respond to that, Arthur McKenzie sends his best. When he saw you were on the list, it's great.
We must put that back to him as well. Yes, he's smashing. What a smashing writer.
Exactly.
A very nice man.
Yeah.
I'm chilling out. That's a great expression. I don't think I've ever said that in my life. I'm chilling out. I'm very chilled out now. Inside number nine for me is all finished. I mean, that's just ready to be shown amongst the other five episodes, which I don't know. Nobody knows when that's coming up. But I bet it'll be Christmas time. It's that kind of spooky period, so it's going to be good. Well, Christmas is not spooky, but tend to show ghost stories.
It can be, though, exactly. You know, you've got the ghost story there, and it's the sort of thing which certainly Rhys Shearsmith, I think, would probably sort of echo in terms of having that slightly more, not grand guignol, but slightly gothic approach to life, maybe. Or maybe not.
I've just booked to go and see him in The Dresser with Ken Stott. Which they're doing sometime in October, 8th of October, I'm going to see it in London, in a theatre in London. That should be really interesting, should be a really good piece for them.
And so, Graham, you bring us around to the programme which launched with Gabriella Peralta and her faithful friend Frodo in Gibraltar, where the time actually was an hour ahead of us, you see. So in Gibraltar now, if they're still actually tuned in, it's coming around to 11 and a half minutes to 11 o'clock. Nearly 11 o'clock in the morning in Gibraltar. Richard Fitzwilliams, inland, of course, movie critics, views certainly on Captain Fantastic, Hunt for the Wilder People, and, of course, his recent trip to Rome. Arthur McKenzie, well, he was just on form. Although it has to be said, not a fan of the country track that we actually played for him today. Never mind, that's what we said. It's always a gamble. Simon Coates, author in the Northeast. I tell you, Graham, if you want curmudgeonly, sometimes Arthur, I think he could get a gold medal in curmudgeonliness, but he's on form. That's the important thing. William said, well, we didn't manage to reach because he was otherwise engaged, but Graham stepped in as ever to actually provide just wonderment for the whole thing. Graham, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today?
Yes, I have.
So can we look forward to connecting with you again in the very near future?
Yes, I look forward to that.
And look out for the dahlia. You know, before you know where you are, Bernadette will have dahlias all over the place. They'll be growing.
I'm hoping she will.
It's astounding.